protest, the campaign against the global banking industry, has arrived in Europe, particularly Britain and Italy. In this edition of the Press TV News Analysis, we will discuss the significance of these Occupy movements, why they have gone global, and why it's not just about the banking industry.
Tens of thousands of Italians protested against corporate greed and embattled Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's economic policies. Protests were staged in major European capitals and other cities, including Athens and Frankfurt. In London, police used kettling tactics in an attempt to contain Occupy London protests. A number of arrests were also made. Ralliers in countries across Asia, as well as in Australia, also joined global demonstrations supporting the Occupy Wall Street protests in the U.S.
Like the people in the Philippines, the American people and the peoples of the other parts of the world are tremendously affected by the crisis of capitalism. And all over the world, people are rising up, including women, to fight for our rights, to fight for the future of our children, to fight for the future of
the top, and to say that we want an alternative, one that's based on human need and human rights, not on, you know, corporate greed.
And he believed the recent popular movements, including the Occupy Wall Street campaign, have been inspired by the revolutions against pro-Western regimes in the Middle East and North Africa. Earlier this year, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution predicted that the winds of change blowing in the revolutionary nations will ultimately reach Europe and the U.S.
این حرکت بیداری تا قلب اروپا خواهد رفت. اون روزی پیش خواهد آمد که همین ملت‌های اروپایی علیه سیاستمداران و زمامداران و قدرتمندانی که اونها رو یکسره تسلیم سیاست‌های فرهنگی و اقتصادی آمریکا و صهیونیست کردن قیام خواهند کرد.
It's yet to be seen how the U.S. and its allies will respond to the growing protest movement that swept through the West as people become increasingly frustrated with their government's capitalist policies.
Back up!
Well, let's try to find out why these have spread at the rate and speed that they have. Let me first introduce our guest. We have from London, Chris Bamberry joining us. He's a political analyst. From New York, Don DeBar, an anti-war activist, joins us. And from Paris, Max Kaiser, financial journalist and broadcaster, rounds up the list. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me go first to you, Chris Bamberry. The Occupy movement against inequality has officially gone global in over 80 countries. This should be ringing alarm bells loudly, yet reactions of respective governments almost none to lukewarm at best. Why is it that they're not reacting at the veracity that these protests are taking place?
I think it's because the government in Britain, David Cameron, across Europe, in North America, basically they have a one-size-fits-all answer to this crisis, which is austerity measures aimed at the majority of the population, cutting living standards, cutting welfare provision, cutting jobs, and they are determined not to move from that position. Here in Britain, the Cameron government will not countenance any other policy apart from driving through this austerity movement. And secondly, that agenda is largely shared by the official opposition in these countries. They may argue over the rate of implementing the austerity measures, but they accept the need to make those cutbacks. So if you like, the establishment, the politicians, the corporate heads, all the rest, share an agenda and are refusing to be budged from that agenda. And in formal political terms, there is no political force in conventional sense that can move that. And that's why we're seeing protests on the streets, because in that situation, people feel deserted by politicians, they feel deserted by parties of the left, and they'll be taking action in their own hands. And I think they're right to do that. And we're seeing coming together some interesting coalitions. On the London protest today, we saw trade unionists with people in precarious jobs, unemployed, students, pensioners, people with families, even tourists joining the protest. In Italy, we see radical trade unionists coming together with social movements, with students and so on, in alliances. And I think a commentator from America can speak for herself, but we're seeing exactly the same forces coming together. And this is a very well-informed movement. Government ministers and media pundits try to dismiss it as saying it's basically just anti-anti-anti, it's anti-capitalist, no more. No, this is a movement which has obvious solutions. For instance, Greece is bankrupt. People know this. Right. There is going to be a default, but the default should be in the interest of the people, not of the bankers. We should be cutting expenditure in war in Britain and America and spending it on welfare. There was money for war in Libya. There's not money for anything else in this country. We should be taxing the rich and pursuing those people who avoid tax or tax fraud. That would cover the British balance of deficit if we just collected in the taxes.
Right.
But of course, the British government and the Greek government are sacking tax collectors just at the moment they need that money. So there are real alternatives. It's an informed movement, an intelligent movement, which has drawn inspiration from Egypt and elsewhere. Today in the city of London, people were putting up imitation street signs saying Tahrir Square. In other words, they've looked at Egypt, they've drawn lessons from Egypt and Tunisia, and want to apply them in this country.
Okay. Don DeBar, same question to you. I mean, what is it going to take? We are seeing what the respective governments are exercising in terms of austerity cuts as being the solution. Of course, at the same time, we're seeing that this idea of bailouts is still continuing. The G20 meeting of finance ministers wrapped up in Paris, and of course, it was about recapitalizing banks, saving Greece, and the bloc's rescue fund to be given, ramping up the firepower there. But I mean, what is it going to take? More people to come and occupy the streets of these respective countries? I mean, don't officials see how big a movement this is when it has gone global at the scale that it has?
Yeah, I think it's significant, first of all, that the Frankfurt event happened because that was held outside the European Central Bank, which is the center of where the decisions about they've used as a clearinghouse, basically. People are in really bad straits across the world. It's not news to about half the population because they've been in bad straits since the advent of colonialism. But the what used to be the middle class in the so-called first world countries has been in crisis now, walking into a crisis for the last 30 years that was hidden by easy credit. But they metabolized their wealth in the forms of their homes and their savings, which dwindled. Their equity in their homes evaporated. And now they're saddled with debt and very poor prospects of employment. And so for a change, you're seeing a commonality of interest being recognized across the bulk of humanity. And you're seeing that the cause of it is the crisis of capitalism, which has been required by its own dynamics, and this was described by Marx 150 years ago, to intensify the exploitation of labor and to intensify and broaden the return on capital. You reach a point where that becomes a crisis, where you've extracted all of the value that's possible without replenishing the ability among the working people and consumers to keep the machine going, to keep the hamster on the wheel. And now that they've used the last tool in their toolbox, which was credit, and they can't blow air into the system anymore. People are aware of the fact that it's an endgame situation. There was a class war. The 1% won. Now what? And what they're doing is organizing themselves because the political structures have been so corrupted for so long and so non-responsive to the needs of people that these Occupy events are basically general assemblies where people are constituting themselves as a government. And as you see that develop further, as they raise demands and the demands are not met, you're going to see people actually act as governments globally in concert with each other through these general assemblies.
We're going to get to that point in a second because they're saying that it's a leaderless movement. But Max Keiser, give us first your impression. And I remember listening to a couple things that I think, well, maybe you could expand more on it. And you said people should take capitalism in their own hands as a tangible way. And also you said in terms of targeting stocks of certain companies, I believe, in one of the coverages that I was watching you on. But you tell us first your impression. And what about this notion of capitalism not working?
Well, I think what's really captured people's imagination is the scale of the fraud. So, for example, just recently, Wachovia Bank, which is now owned by Wells Fargo, whose biggest investor is Warren Buffett, was caught laundering $400 billion in Mexican drug money, cartel money. They don't dispute it. Nobody disputes it. They paid a small civil fine. Bank of New York was just discovered by Harry Markopoulos, the man who exposed the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. They've stolen over $300 billion from pension accounts by stealing 0.3% of every transaction they've been involved with going back 30 years. Then you've got, I'm just looking at the Supreme Court today in America, has sided with the corrupt mortgage banks through what's called the MERS scandal, where they had robo-signing of mortgages, and they had fraudulent mortgage inducement. They had forged documents. So now the Supreme Court has okayed and give their blessing to no prosecution for a $600 billion scheme. So just in the past week, we've seen over $1 trillion stolen from the American people through outright, unequivocal fraud perpetrated by bankers like Jamie Dimon. It's no surprise that his house is being surrounded up there on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. It's like the Supreme Court and the Obama administration is taunting the people. It's almost as if it's Marie Antoinette who's saying, basically, come and get me if you think you're so tough. You know, and historically, that hasn't worked well for the aristocracy and the monopolists. And I remember in this country, in France, where we are now, going back a couple of hundred years, there was the famous invention of the guillotine that took care of these people. And I'm all for it. I think that's what we need to purge the system, because we need to get rid of the people who are perpetrating these crimes so they can't reproduce, they can't continue perpetrating their crimes. 1793 should be the example. And they've left us no choice. So they brought it on. So let's bring to them what they want. I think they feel very guilty, and they want us to help them resolve the issue for themselves and relieve them of their guilt and everything from the neck up.
Okay, but from the neck up is what Chris Bamberry, this movement's, many of them are, if not all of them, and also, if not all, unanimously, they all are claiming they're leaderless movements. How will they be able to make changes if there's not a leader in place? How can that? How can the power be taken out of the ones who have the power and return it back to the people?
Because I think they're talking about collective power and real democracy. And I think we've seen that. We saw it in the student movement in this country at the end of last year. We've seen it on the streets a number of times. I think we've seen, Max Keiser was talking about the vengeance of the people. I think we saw that in August in this country with the biggest social unrest in decades and people taking it into their own hands. This is what's going to happen. You cannot have such extremes of wealth and poverty side by side. In London, you can walk 5 minutes from a house which is worth £6.5 million towards an area where there is dense overcrowding, real problems of poverty. You can't have that cheek with jowl. There's going to be an explosion. And in this country, we've already seen the biggest student movement in 3 decades. We've seen the biggest social unrest in 3 decades, the biggest trade union demonstration in 3 decades. We're going to see the biggest strike in 3 decades next month. This is in 1 year of David Cameron's government. These people are actually bringing it on. And I thought today in Italy, the slogan which is being chanted, One Solution Revolution, does actually sum it up. People want a fundamental change, and they will create new forms of democracy. In any revolutionary movement, any upheaval, people have thrown up new forms of democracy.
Give us examples.
In Hungary in 1956, in Barcelona in 1936, in Russia in 1917, in Iran in 1979 and 1905.
Okay, people give us some examples, if you have me.
We don't need a Tony Blair, a Barack Obama, or, heaven's sake, a Silvio Berlusconi for our society.
Well, you probably didn't hear me, but Don DeBar, I'll ask you this. You know, this thing about democracy keeps coming up,
yes.
A new form of democracy. What was the democracy? Was it a dictated democracy based on the configuration that the 1% saw that was dictated to the 99%, to use the different variations there of the percentages? And what is the new democracy that people are saying? I mean, Chris Bamberry mentioned it. Of course, a host of protesters have said that also.
Well, the model that's been used at the highest level of development of democracy in the Western countries is what's called representative democracy. And actually, the United States is a republic, which is a step further removed from control by the people. The form that's being used now in these general assemblies, which has been used in some other places during revolutionary periods, is a general assembly or a popular assembly, which is a direct democracy model. You do not elect representatives, but you rather gather together and make policy. You're allowed to bring something to the group, whatever demand you want, whatever recommendation you want, and then a consensus is reached on whether or not that goes onto the list of demands or the list of tasks to be pursued. And it's interesting because aside from being the subject of, say, for example, New Left texts of the 1960s, where this was a very popular idea, probably the most widely known treatise on this type of government is Gaddafi's Green Book. And so in a way, you can look at what's happening in the United States as Gaddafi's revenge, as these general assemblies start moving towards a demand and a practice of direct democracy, where the people make the decisions themselves and see to their implementation, rather than electing a class of people through a corrupt election process. I mean, let's face it, the people generally don't choose the two candidates, Democratic or Republican, anyway. There's a very convoluted process that's heavily dominated by capital and has a whole legal construct around it that guarantees people from being shut out of the decision-making process. So you end up with a decision between two choices of capital to run the country, to be members of Congress, even to be mayor or city council members in your own community. And this type of model where the people will assemble from time to time and legislate and enact into practice the things that they legislate, it's a new form. It's been tried in a number of places. Again, we just heard Chris mention 1905, for example, with the workers' councils. The Petrograd Soviet, for example, was the first model of this in Russia that ended up being, in 1917, the prevalent model throughout the country. There were things that happened after that, but that happened in Russia back, it's almost 100 years ago. The question I have is it 1905 in the United States or 1917? And again, I point out that some people are saying that what's happening here is actually Gaddafi's revenge.
Max Keiser, a lot of the countries that witnessed these protests, one of the reasons I would think, and you could probably enlighten us more, is because people lost money. They had investments, for example, in Lehman Brothers when it collapsed, or in the United States, I remember, with Enron. And of course, there's countless of other ways that people lost their money. But in a sense, these financial institutions, where they have branches all over the world, seem to be at least the target, for example, Goldman Sachs in Italy, where it was a target. And again, Goldman Sachs was also a target in New York City. If what would you do, given that you are a financial journalist and you're in tune with these financial institutions, in order to reverse this and have tangible results come down to the people for there to be a reversal and to satisfy them?
Well, I was a stockbroker on Wall Street for many years, and before I got my license, I had to know inside and out the Securities Act of 33 and 34, which was put into place after the crash of 1929 and during the Depression that resulted as a result of that crash. And that document, along with the FDIC and Glass-Steagall, which was put in place by FDR, created the American century. It created the boom that we call the American success story. For the last 20 to 30 years, principally since Reagan going forward, that's all been destroyed. Now you have a kleptocracy. There's no rule of law on Wall Street. It's very easy to steal money. I mean, I was working on Wall Street. I was for Payne Weber was the name of the firm, and I worked also at Oppenheimer. And we stole money every day. And we paid off the compliance manager who worked in the office every day. We bribed the options trader on the desk every single day. But we were only stealing millions. When you hear the stories today about stealing hundreds of billions every day, high-frequency trading by Goldman Sachs, they steal $100 million every single day. It's totally been documented. They don't deny it. Lloyd Blankfein says, yes, we do steal this money, but we're doing God's work. He's a market fundamentalist. He believes in killing himself and others to make money. You know, we need is our Islamic and Arab brothers to help us with this? You know, what about declaring some fatwas on these guys? Forget about Salman Rushdie. What about Jamie Dimon or Lloyd Blankfein? Give us some support. We're desperate over here. These guys are killing us. They're market fundamentalists and terrorists, and we're dying. Maybe you can help us. Let's get rid of them.
Chris Bamberry, I am sure that obviously the officials that are in power, like David Cameron or like Nicolas Sarkozy, they're aware of what's going on. But yet, of course, in the UK, £83 billion in austerity cuts is announced. And we see what's happened in Greece and other countries such as Italy and Spain with their massive austerity cuts while what Max said is going on. Why is that they're allowing this to happen?
Because, as I say, they're committed to a neoliberal agenda, a free market agenda, from which they will not budge. And their only answer to this is to make us pay. And when I say us, I mean the vast majority, 99% of the population. It's our jobs, our pensions, our wages are going to pay for this. And they refuse to budge from this tenant. But I think you've also got to say something else. There's a financial crisis. There's a debt crisis in Europe. But also the economy, there is zero growth. You look at why Italy was downgraded, it's not particularly got a financial crisis. It was downgraded partly because Silvio Berlusconi's ineptitude in terms of, as is seen, but also because the Italian economy is not growing and labour costs in Italy cannot compete with those in Germany. There is no real economic growth in Europe or North America. And that is pulling down the rest of the world. Because already we've seen the one economy which is growing in Europe going into reverse, which is Germany. And that's going to affect China as well. China sells to Europe and to North America. A collapse in the economy is going in Europe and North America is going to affect the rest of the world. And we do need help. Because what we're seeing in Greece is exactly what happened in Argentina at the beginning of the decade before last, and what's seen in sub-Saharan Africa and elsewhere in the 1990s, is the IMF and the European Commission, the European Central Bank coming in, implementing a structural adjustment program, which devastates people's lives. And you're seeing Greece being rolled back decades, almost a century in terms of social services, living standards, and life expectation. That is a fate which awaits other countries in Europe. Portugal, Spain have been thrust into this already. Italy is now in the mire. Belgium is in the mire this week after having had to bail out one of its biggest banks. And Britain, to be honest, is teetering on the edge. Ireland is already there. The crisis in Europe is a real crisis which is spreading. But what the effect is of a devastation in terms of people's expectations. And that's why young people, and this is very much a youth bubble, are on the streets.
I'm sorry to jump in. Unfortunately, Chris Bamberry, I apologize. We're out of time. Thank you. Chris Bamberry from London, political analyst. Don DeBar, thank you so much. He's an anti-war activist. Max Keiser, financial journalist and broadcaster, thank you all for your views. And, of course, you, the viewer, send us your views, questions or comments, in addition to a newsroom at presstv.ir. From Mikhail Vitakvoi and the entire team in Tehran, it's goodbye.